Russell Westcott from Rain, Canada, with another issue of Real Estate Investing in Canada interview series. You know what? It's been almost 3 years since our last interview with our guest today, and even as recent as last week, someone was telling me that they still listen to that audio interview on a weekly basis. So you know what? I thought it was time that we complete a brand new interview, expose more people to our esteemed guest today. Make sure you grab yourself a pen and paper, as you will be taking plenty of notes and referring to those notes often. Today's special guest is an Olympic personal and business coach, and she is a difference maker. If you read biographies of successful people, one of the most common themes you will find is that you need to have a trusted advisor on your team to help you accomplish your journey. And in business of real estate, there is no difference. At times, we need a trusted advisor, someone we can go to for help, and get that insight into specific areas that may be having challenges. And from working with these trusted advisors is where true progress and quantum leaps occur. Without further delay, please help welcome Stephanie Hanlon to the call. Stephanie, how are you doing today?
Hi, Russell. It's just so good to be back on the phone with you. I'm doing great. Since we last spoke, I've certainly had an incredible journey working with athletes and business people and speaking all across the country and working on my hockey development company and just hanging with my husband and my dog in beautiful British Columbia.
And so what are you doing right now? I know we managed to squeeze in between appointments here. You've got some exciting things on the go right now. What do we find you doing today?
Today, well, I always have Tuesdays and Thursdays minimum. I always go to the gym and I do an hour workout with my trainer. So I built in the fitness pillar into my goals. I walk my dogs, Louie and Missy, and then I'm doing this interview with you, and then I'm jumping in the vehicle, driving out to a fabulous arena in the Lower Mainland here in Abbotsford, and teaching 10 junior hockey potential stars how to skate.
Well, and that's one of the most amazing things I know about you, Stephanie, is you can get on the sweats and the hat and the ponytail and the hockey gloves and skates and get out there with the boys on the ice and, you know, yell at them and tell them how to skate better. And then that night you can put on an incredible evening gown and you're at the bell of the ball. So.
Well, thanks. You know what, Russell? I think the gift in that for me is diversification and understanding that just as a woman and as a human being is that it's really important that we take care of ourselves in a whole bunch of different aspects of life, that we can be athletic, we can be smart, we can be beautiful, we can be funny, we can be successful. So really the commitment that I've made to my own life and my own personal journey is that I want to work in every area of life to make myself a champion to the best that I can. You know, it's too late for me to win Olympic gold medals, but I can certainly do my best and be as excellent as I can be in the areas of life that matter to me.
Wow. And I tell you what, you do have a servant's heart, I know that personally of you. And every time my wife and I have a chance to have dinner with you and your husband, you know, we walk away better people. So I want to thank you for that. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to help the people that are going to listen to this. So before we jump into this, I know many people might know about your story. Some people might not. But give us a little quick snapshot, and why is it important that we're listening to you today?
Well, today I think our intention for today, Russell, is to really discuss and talk about and banter about the opportunities and the options that people have about taking action, what it takes, why we want something, why we want what we want. You know, we're all about setting goals and moving forward and taking massive action and all these kinds of things. But I really want to bring it down to one thing, is that really, what is your why? Why do you want something? Why do you want another piece of property? Why do you want to get married? Why do you want to do what you want to do? And that's really been life-changing for me. 20-some years ago, I wanted to be an NHL skating coach. And lots of people want to be NHL skating coaches. But I knew why. Underneath the wanting was the why. And, you know, I always ask, how big is your why? I always ask my client, you want to be an NHL player? You want to be a multi-million dollar real estate investor? Why? And it doesn't always have to be altruistic. What I learned was the reason I wanted to be an NHL hockey skating coach was that I wanted to make a huge difference in the lives of hockey players. I saw the connection very, very early on between confidence and skating speed. the faster they got, the more confident they got. It didn't matter how tall they were, how strong they were, what level they were playing. I saw the connection between speed and confidence. So I focused in on one area. I didn't need to be all things to all people. And then as I moved ahead and really accomplished those goals, I then knew I wanted to go to the Olympics. I wanted to be an Olympian, and I didn't know how that was going to look, but I also knew why. And that came from knowing my why of being an NHL skating coach. I knew that if I was making a big enough difference in the lives of athletes at the NHL level, which is one of the highest paid athletic endeavors in the world, I could also make a difference for amateur athletes. And that's when I started to turn my world into an area of contribution. And as much as I do okay financially in the world of sport, that's not where I make my money. But I do know my why. And it's because I know I can make a difference and I can help athletes transition from being, whether they're top 10 in the world, top 20 in the world, top 2 in the world, that I can help them transition to life after sport with the exact same skills I used with NHL hockey players.
Wow. And I know you touched on something here about the why. And I can almost guess that 100% of the people on this call intellectually have heard about this thing, got to have a strong enough why, got to have a strong enough why. Okay, I get it, Stephanie, I got to have a strong enough why. What about if I don't know what my why is? How can we help people along maybe today to identify what their strong enough why is?
Well, a big why really is an obvious yet an inobvious, if that's a word, motivation. Lots of people, in my experience, seek motivation externally. They're looking outside. They want to lose weight so they can fit in the skinny jeans. They want more money so they can have a bigger house. So the why becomes almost about something outside of them. So for today, for anyone who's listening, what I would suggest is you take a look at the life that you've created around you and look at your family, look at your home, look at your social structure, look at your spirituality, look at your fitness level, and determine if it's what you want. And if it is, then sort of, okay, check, put it to the side. You don't need to work on that anymore. If you have what you want and you want what you have, there's no reason to keep pounding away at it. But take a look at the things that aren't exactly the way that you want them.
Okay.
And when you do that, you can then take a moment, take a deep breath, and write down 3 or 4 things that are in your way. Now, it could be something as just silly as what I call the big fat lie. It could be, I want a new home or I want a new sofa, but I don't have money to go buy it. I don't have time to go shopping. So we always look at the why, but right away there's a but. So if you can write down your why, or your what, I'm sorry, this is what I want, and then right away you write down your big fat lie. What's your excuse or your reason for not getting it or not pursuing it? And then sit with yourself quietly for a minute and go, ooh, is that really true? Because what I've noticed, Russell, is that many times, if we don't have a big enough why, we don't really want what we say we want.
Right. And it's something that's outside of us as opposed to something core within us.
Totally.
Okay. So, you know, one of the things I like to do with my guests and is to do role play a little bit. And typically the role playing is maybe something that's near and dear to me. Because it is, after all about me. But
yes, of course it is.
As I'm joking.
Mine's all about me, and that's the other good thing about this call, is that hopefully the person that's listening knows it's all about them.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's say intellectually I know that I need to exercise more, and I know I need to lose some weight, and you know what? I've been putting on a few pounds over the couple past years, but you know what? I'm almost defending it, and it's okay. You know, I know it's not going the direction I want, but it's okay. So how do I get how do I determine what's my why for me?
Well, you know what? If you're okay with where you're at right now, then there's absolutely no way to get over the motivation of not working out, for example. It's not important enough to you yet. I tell a story with one of my clients who she was almost, I think she was 246 or 248 pounds when I first met her, and she had just been diagnosed with diabetes. And she went to the doctor and said, or the doctor told her that if you don't lose weight, so-and-so, you will die. So she goes away and she says, oh my gosh. So she got on the gym, you know, got to the gym and went on a certain program to lose weight and did all these things, didn't lose any weight. Within 2 to 3 weeks, she completely lost her motivation. So dying wasn't a big enough motivation. So as we're having our meeting, we're sitting there, and if you've ever, like you say, you've done some work with me, so you know it's very circuitous, it's non-linear, sometimes it makes no sense. And the question I asked her was, so if you don't lose weight, you're going to die. So dying isn't a big enough motivator. And she says, you know, no, it isn't. I said, but what if you leave your 8-year-old daughter without a mom? And that's what got her.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to link it to what matters to us as individuals. Dying to her didn't matter, but we had to reframe it in a way that she had an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old daughter who would be left without a mother, and she wouldn't see them grow up or get married or graduate from school, fall in love, and that's what got her going to the gym.
Right.
6 months later, she dropped 70 pounds.
70. Holy moly.
So the work that I do is really values-based. It's not normal. It's completely random in this regard because everybody's really in these conversations. If you watch Oprah, you're in this conversation with people. If you're reading a self-help book, you're in this conversation. But until you can change your actions and link it to what truly hits your heart and motivates you. See, I got teary when I told that story.
Right.
Because that's what mattered to me, is I made a difference in her life. I didn't care if she lost weight or not. Really, I mean, I do. But I can't care more about my clients' goals than they do.
Right.
But the minute we got to it, whatever it is for her, whatever it was for her, providence steps in. Energy, motivation, inspiration. She got fired up. I got fired up. I got recommitted, right? So then
right.
You've got a minimum of two people working towards that same goal.
Right. And then you start getting other people involved, then you start surrounding yourself with people that are going to ask you how I can help you accomplish
right.
this, as opposed to people beating up on you a little bit more.
Exactly. So it really is, it's an emotional and a mental shift when you're asking your why and how to get to the gym, or how do I find that special person in my life? How do I find that next cash-flowing piece of real estate? I have one client from a real estate client. I don't think they were a Ring member, though. Just really had everything done really well and squeaky clean and ready to invest in their first property. And couldn't close the deal. And what we had to get to was they didn't really want to invest in real estate. It was something their dad wanted them to do.
Huh.
So, again, whose values are we living and why?
Right.
So the what is fine. That particular client thought he wanted to invest in real estate, but his why wasn't big enough. His why was because my dad wants me to. And you know and I know how much when other people impose their values on us, it's like a snowball. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's not in a positive way.
So are you saying, if I'm hearing between some of the lines too, is in order to get to our why, we maybe have to take some time to ourselves with a pad and paper and just be quiet for a bit and ask some genuine questions and look for a genuine answer from it. Can you usually tell if the answer is right for you by just how you feel from it, or?
I think so. I think there's an opportunity for people to really take a look, take a moment, because in our busy lives, really, how often do we just sit quietly and think? I bought my husband a thinking chair 1 year for Christmas.
All right.
And so the intention was when he sat in that chair, he needed to think. Sometimes he'd fall asleep, but the intention was that was his time. And when he was sitting in that chair, and it was in a little den in our home office in Edmonton, and when he sat in that chair, nobody interrupted him. It was his thinking chair. I still call it his thinking chair, and that's 10 years later.
Wow.
So there is the time that we have to take. We can't make time. We have to take our time for ourselves and to ask those questions. It could be in the car instead of listening to your CD. Sorry, I know I shouldn't say that right now, but maybe turn it off for 30 seconds right now and see what happens. And just think about what we've been saying for a second and then turn it back on, of course. But if they just take a second, whether they're in their car, whether you're in, you know, having breakfast, put the paper aside for a second, get off Facebook, stop texting, you know, texting for 30 seconds, and just sit with yourself and ask some of the hard questions. What do I want? Why do I want it? Then maybe the how can show up, or the when. If we don't know why.
That leads into my next question here is, you have a formula that you talk about: know your why, then wanting, then when, then how, then what, in that specific order. Why do most people get focused on the what, and they get hung up on the what? So if you can talk a little bit about that formula.
Well, I think it's scratching the surface of this whole, you know, our North American or our Western culture is all about the what, you know, what do you want? If you don't know your goals, you won't achieve them. If you don't know where you're going, you'll never get there. Any road will take you. You know, we have all the lines everywhere. So most people start with the what. And then they try to go, how? Well, okay, this is what I want. Okay, how am I going to do it? So guess what happens when you go from what to how? You're like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I guess I better hire a coach. So I get all these phone calls, and most, probably 9 out of 10 people that call me are certainly not wanting me as their coach, because I'm not the how coach, and I'm not an accountability coach. I'm the why coach. So they go from their what, and they go, but now I need a coach because I need to learn how. Well, actually, we don't know how to do things until we know why, and there's the paradox again. So from what, then we go, oh, okay, how do I need to do it? And that's the number one thing that shuts people down. Hmm. And the second thing that shuts people down is, well, when? Huh, I can't do that. I'm disorganized, or I have a time limit, or I can only do this between this time and this time. So the time becomes a factor.
Right.
Right.
And that's very real for a lot of people that would be listening.
It's extremely real. That's why I flip it, because the minute you're connected to your why, all of a sudden, there's no time issues. There's no time issues, because we find the time, we make the time to do the things that inspire us. If you just look around right now and look at your wall, or look at the photos that you have on your screen or whatever, you'll see right away what your highest value is and where you put your time. I don't know a lot of, there's that funny line, I don't know a lot of people on their deathbed that says, you know, I wish I would have spent more time in the office.
Right.
You know, but it's not always family for people. And that's the other thing, especially for the women listening. I'd really like them to take a look at where they feel guilty around making themselves and other people think that family is their highest value. And that's, I'm going to say something controversial here, Russell.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. You ready? Here,
yes,
I go
please.
Again.
Okay.
For many women, we're driven and we're taught, and it's culturally acceptable, and we are labeled to expose the value that family is number one. Family and children are number one, and it has to be that for all women. And now for many women, that's very true. But for those of us that maybe don't have children, or maybe that haven't had been blessed with children, or haven't been married, or maybe they're in a same-sex partnership that don't choose children, whatever our unique situation is that for many women, we're living somebody else's value that says family's number one. So when we go to take a step in the direction of, let's say, financial success in real estate, or we want to be I don't know, a rocket scientist, or we want to maybe climb Mount Everest, or we want to be in the financial world, or whatever, there's a cultural guilt that kicks in. And it really is devastating, and it's quite dramatic for many women.
Right, so, and then on the other side, too, do you find some women who lose themselves so much in their family that they lose themselves at the same time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of times when I'm sitting with a woman and we're talking about this, I'll say, what's your number one value? What's your highest? Oh, my children, my family, absolutely, my husband. Yet deep down there's this aching that's going, you know, I really miss that time with my girlfriends. I really miss that going to the office and putting makeup on, or, you know, getting dressed up and jumping on the SkyTrain and going downtown for a meeting. There's something around self-worth that drives a woman. We get a lot of that from our family. That's true, because for most women, it is the most important job in the world. But for many, they're still living value that really is driving them, that is holding them back in other areas of their life. So it's very difficult to get to the what they want. And certainly, how am I going to do it when I'm running four different directions with seven different kids, and I've got three children going here and one going there and a husband that's doing this?
Well, so, and what happens when you do a really good job and your goal is to make your children self-sufficient on their own, and then all of a sudden they leave the nest? Where are you going to get a lot of who you valued yourself as for the past 20 years?
Exactly. I call that the power of, ready? Now what?
Now what?
Right? So that's the gap or the transition that I talk about a lot. The power of now what? I've done a brilliant job for 18, 20 years with my children. They're healthy, they're happy, they've moved out, or whatever the scenario is. Or my husband is successful now, and I've supported this, and I've done that, and I'm on this, and I'm on that. And next thing you know, people have moved on, and you're standing there with your flag going, well, wait a minute, what about me?
Yeah.
So I call that the power of now what?
Very
and I spend a lot of time with my clients in that transition.
Well, that's probably why a lot of people come to see you is in that transition phase. They're not sure what the next step is for them, or they just need some a second set of eyes to get some clarity around what's important. So.
Exactly, and having a conversation with somebody that maybe is a little bit outside their world, or that's what I'm finding the power of telephone coaching. I used to do a lot of my coaching in person, and now I've transitioned into telephone coaching. If a person's in their environment and really enjoying their space, and I can actually really connect them to an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours by phone to themselves, it's very interesting how much faster people can actually move through some of this stuff.
And speaking of moving through stuff, you have to actually take some kind of action to do something. So in your world, you're known as someone who does things. I heard one of your famous questions is say yes and after figure out what does that mean?
Say yes first.
Say yes first and then, but what does that mean? So
yeah.
You're famous for taking a tremendous amount of action, but what to you does action mean? Is it just motion, or is it motion purpose? What does it mean to you?
To me, it's focused and directed right action. And what that means, I don't mean as in right or wrong. I just mean excellence is a straight line. It's very clear to me in my life, or even for when I'm coaching a client, on the dedicated right action that they need to take in order to take the next step in whatever it is they want to go, wherever it is they want to go, sorry. Taking action to me is a decision. And most people will stop there, and that's where the analysis paralysis kicks in. They make the decision, and then the how kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't have a big enough why. So really there is no action to be taken in that regard. So action for me, when you take action, you have to be willing to accept some things are going to change.
Right. Oh, there's a scary word.
That's a very scary word, which, of course, when you think of change, it's really the only consistent thing in life, other than maybe death and taxes, they say. But change. So where do we not embrace change? So if the first thing is to decide, to make the mental decision, then to connect to the why you want to do something, and then to make the most, okay, this is where it's really cool, take the smallest, most obvious step. And that's what makes me laugh when people say I'm a massive action taker. You know what I do? I just take incremental steps all the time. So it just looks like I'm taking massive action.
Right.
I don't take giant steps because I'm not really, I don't take chances. I take risks, but I don't take chances. You know, I'm not, you know, if I want to, you know, gamble, I'll go to Vegas. I don't take chances in my relationships. I don't take chances, you know, in real estate. I take calculated, dedicated, right action.
Right. And it's amazing on how powerful the not change, whether it's a gene or whatever it is. You know, I just had an example with Crane's parents, my wife's parents, on, you know, they're thinking about Crane's mom is thinking about wanting to move, and Crane's dad is, I grew up in Burnaby, I'm going to live in Burnaby, my store is in Burnaby, my gym is in Burnaby, I'm going to die in Burnaby. And it's just like, wow, okay, the house will literally fall on top of him before he'll consider moving out of the house.
Wow.
It's pretty powerful stuff, the defense of not wanting to change.
Well, there's a comfort in there, I think, for some people. There's a place where we find comfort in familiarity. And we think we're taking action or we're making changes just by, you know, by the seasons. The beautiful thing about, you know, where we live in Canada, all across Canada, is that we have seasons. We're comfortable with change. There's a morphing. There's an evolution that goes on naturally around us. We're changing. They say in the physiology world, and I studied a lot of physiology in university, is that our entire system changes every 7 years.
Right.
So we're changing whether we like it or know it or not. So I just like to be in charge of my changes, and so that at least I can take some small steps in the direction. So I do understand where your father-in-law is at. There's probably some comfort in that, and there's some familiarity in those types of things, and change is scary. And the older you get, Russell, I think if you haven't practiced change and it hasn't become part of your practice, your routine, your day-to-day, then it's something I don't think that's really even healthy for a lot of people. And the other side of that is that why I think it's unhealthy for a lot of people that haven't practiced or started the practice of being change agents or comfortable with change is that it can create drama and massive discord in family if all of a sudden somebody says, hey, I want to change,
right.
You know, and they've created an environment of values based on, you know, an agreement, because relationships are agreements. A relationship is just an agreement based on a conversation. So if that comfort has been created that this is where we live, this is where we're going to shop, this is where we're going to work out, this is where we're going to do it, that's an agreement. To change that agreement can scare the heck out of people.
Right. And if you actually think about it, well, the point that you made earlier about, you know, every 7 years, if you think about it, every 7 years, every cell in your body will be different than where it is right now. So the question is, are you consciously making, because no matter what change is going to happen, no matter what.
It is.
So are you consciously making better choices or not?
Exactly. So we can carry on the dis-ease, or we can carry on the mindset, you know, over and over and over again, just to stay in our own comfort zone or in our own box. But my line that I love to use is people used to say to me, oh, Stephanie, you just so think outside the box. And, you know, I would just stare at them blankly and I go, what box? What box are you talking? I didn't even know there was a box.
Right.
So it's like a comfort zone. What are you talking about, a comfort zone? If I'm comfortable, I am not comfortable.
Right.
You know, I'm not seeking comfort. And that's the difference when you see people, you know, that are taking dedicated right action in the areas of their vision and their values, and the RAIN members that are out taking the incremental steps and taking the workshops and making those implementation cards work for themselves. When you see that, when I see that, Russell, I know that those types of people will look back on their lives and go, look at the journey I took, and it did take change, and it took courage, and it took learning, and it took education, and it even took maybe making people angry or letting some people go or bringing new people into my life and trying on different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's happening, like you say, whether we know it or like it or not. So why not just be in charge of it?
Right. Get in front of the marching band and
exactly.
Lead a beautiful symphony.
Oh, I know. Seriously, sometimes, you know, I think people still think, you know, they look at me as a leader, they think, but I'm really not. I lead from behind. So I understand how hard it is for people to change. And I'm that person, that cheerleader, that person that's going, you know what, you can do this. I can support you. You can do this.
Right.
Take the most obvious, smallest step, and you have taken action.
Right. And it doesn't have to be earth-shattering. So
no, and it's a practice.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like any muscle. And so you talked about the dedicated right action. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, people get, okay, I got it. I'm hearing about it. You know, however, you don't know my story. So what, from your experience, you've identified that there's probably about three things getting in the way of people taking action. And those three things stop people about 90% of the time. What are those three things?
Well, the first one, I believe, is trust. There's such a lack of trust out there. In inside ourselves, we've taken action, or we've trusted people with our money, with our hearts, with whatever, and we've been burnt, or so we go smaller. So instead of taking the action in the direction we want because we need to have some success around it, we don't take the action because we don't trust the outcome, or we don't fully surrender to the education or the learnings or whatever. So the number one thing is trust. Okay. You know, you look around at some of the, and I don't mean to be rude, Russell, but there are so many shysters out there, people that will take your money, that will just leave you. Look at, you know, the Bernie Madoffs of the world. There's scandals, you know, but there's so many good and honest professionals and companies with high values that can support us in taking proper steps. There's great advisors. And when we trust, it's a trusting ourselves first. It's listening to our gut. It's understanding who we are, what our values are, and then taking the dedicated right action in that area of where we trust. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So are you a firm believer in the old Ronald Reagan quote, trust but verify?
Well, I like trust, yes, exactly, or trust in God but tie up your camel. I think that one's a little older.
Yeah, probably.
But no, it's true. It's about responsibility. It's you know, we can't just open our everything and say, oh, here you go, and just hand it over to some, you know, slick looking investment guy. If we've done that over and over again, we keep doing that. Shame on you.
Right.
Really, because that means we're not doing the due diligence or the work we need to do to build the trust in ourselves. I trust myself when I'm going to make a purchase. I trust that I've done the due diligence. I trust that I'm possibly going to make a mistake. I trust the people I have around me. Because if you don't trust your coaches, you don't trust your advisors, you don't trust your partner, then there's a 99.9 chance that something's going to mess up.
Right.
Okay. So, what's the second
thing on the list?
For me, this is in a hierarchy. I believe there's 9 or 10, but I'm going to say there's top three is organization. This is a real funny one. Again, it's not the most obvious, but when a lot of times people won't take action, or they won't go and seek advice and counseling or coaching, is because they feel they're disorganized.
Or they're embarrassed that they're disorganized, and they don't want to air dirty laundry to somebody else that they're not as organized as people think they are.
Yep, you got it. And it's just absolutely amazing to me that organization. I believe there's two qualities of champions, and this is my world, from my world of sport, obviously. There's two common qualities that all champion athletes have. And everybody, I'll ask that in the room, what are the commonalities between champions? What are some of the key qualities that they have? And they'll say dedication, resilience, work ethic. And I'm like, yep, tick, tick. But you know what the two are? The number one quality that all champion athletes and business people that I work with have in common is their ability to navigate distractions and engage chaos. And the number two thing is they're organized.
And one helps the other too, doesn't it?
Yes. I'm not saying that, you know, their desk is clean or their sock drawer is perfect, but in their dedicated right action, in their box or their pillar or whatever it is they're working in, there is an order that makes sense to them. I'm not saying I know why my athletes are organized, or I can walk into an apartment or a dressing room or look at someone's hockey bag and go, how do you even find anything in there? But it's organized to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quality number two. But the first quality, of course, is navigating and overcoming chaos, navigating distractions. So those are the two things. Well, the third thing that gets in the way in my world of people taking action is control and communication. There's usually an interdependency, like a married couple, siblings, maybe parents, you know, partners or whatever. There's withholds. There's lack of communication. There's miscommunication, right? So if you have that third person, a coach or a professional or an advisor, somebody can actually help you flush out the true communication. So control and communication, a lot of times people won't let go of control of what they know. Like your father-in-law, for example, it's what he knows, right? He can't let that go. So those are the three things that I say are the top three issues why people don't take action.
Perfect. And just for everyone keeping track on your scorecard there, it's trust, organization, control, and communication. So think that's a brilliant list. And you know what? That's what I really like about you, Steph. It's not the traditional things that we hear, but everything you say makes complete sense and how it all hangs together. So thank you very much. So
you're welcome.
Next topic I want to talk about. I got a couple one here. One that's real for people is, some people just get the feeling of overwhelmed, and they're just always on the go, and you don't know my schedule. You know, it's almost like a badge of honor that we're as busy as we are. And, you know, it's real, and it's absolutely, I'm not dismissing it and not discounting that people's schedules are crazy. You know, I know some people that have insane in schedules, and I wouldn't want it, and mine can be very taxing at times, too. But how do we get past the feeling of just being overwhelmed?
Well, I think we go back to the values conversation again. We really focus on the things we love to do. I know that I will talk to a woman or a client or a guy, a hockey player, or whomever I'm working with at the time, and they'll start the conversation about how busy they are and how they just don't have time to do this, or they need to cut their meeting down from 2 hours to 1 hour, or because they're busy. And then I'll just be randomly looking around, and I'll walk by my computer, and I'll see that they're on Facebook or they're chatting, or, you know, and I don't know if they're chatting about business or they're dedicated right action, you know, or their goals. But there are things that people do that we choose to do that will override what we say we want.
Right.
And to me, that's the first kicker of busyness, I call it, you know, not just overwhelm and business, but busyness. We create a busy picture a lot of times, and they've done lots of studies across in Harvard and North America that when you really look at an 8-hour day, they're saying that true activity and actuality, the workload is usually closer to 4.5 hours. And what goes on the rest of the day? You know?
Stuff.
It's just stuff. So I would rather have a really powerful, quality 30-minute meeting with somebody or a 60-minute workout and be in that container or in that pillar of my life and be fully engaged in it. And then when I'm out of it, I then complete that or close that door, and then I move into what's next. But sometimes I'll watch people leave the gym. The first thing they do, pull out their BlackBerry, start answering texts or emails, and they run to the next. So they really are creating a busy picture. Hmm. I'm not saying and disrespecting, you know, the overwhelm and the overload of the things we take on, but come on. I'm in charge of my schedule, just like you're in charge of your schedule. We're all busy. Everybody's busy. But are we procrastinating? Are we truly doing the things we say we want to do to get the results that we want to? I don't know. Then that's the other reason why people don't like working with me, is because I shine a light on those things.
Right.
And then they go, I didn't know I was going to have all this time. I went, well, sorry.
Right. And a filter you might want to check that against is, are you, and sorry, I'm making an acronym for you, is are you taking your DRA, your dedicated right action.
Exactly.
Is that what's
well, that's why, you know, it's funny when we were talking about this, even getting together for this call, you know, I knew what my day was going to look like. You know, I have an hour call from 8 to 9. I have one from 10 after 9 to 10 to. Then I go to the gym, and then I come back, and then I have I eat a carb within 20 minutes. I walk my dogs. I get, you know, so it's not that I'm controlled.
Well, so, Steph, what if your dogs don't poop on the right schedule?
Will
it throw you behind on the walk?
Oh, no, it could. But you know what? No, I'm flexible enough. Whatever, they need to stay outside. But it's not controlled or controlling. It's actually, it's flow.
Right.
And I know it's like, I guess in sport they call it the zone or whatever, but I decide in advance. And here's a little secret I'll share with you, is that before I get out of bed, I set my intentions for the day.
Right.
I lay there. I can smell the coffee bubbling up from downstairs because Patrick's always awake before me. So I lay there and I say, good morning. And I, not out loud, of course, because people think I'm crazy. And I just welcome the day, and I go, what outcome do I want today? What do I want to contribute? Where do I want to make the biggest difference? And how do I want my life to feel today? Today, because our life is just built up of a whole bunch of just todays. So every day I get a new chance to say that.
Yep.
So I set an intention for this call of what I wanted to contribute, what I wanted to get out of it, what I wanted to share with you, you know, those types of things. I do that in advance, so I'm stepping into it. It's like a hockey game plan or a figure skating program. It's set up in advance.
Yep.
All we have to do as professionals and champions is to step into the game plan. And that's so much easier to me than just willy-nilly randomly creating my life as I go.
I hear you. I too find it invaluable. One of the exercises I do when I have a chance to first sit down in the morning is set an intention for the day. And you know what? I don't know how I'm going to do it, but you know what? And it could be as simple as just, you know, complete my list or, you know, trust myself in decisions today or any of those kind of things. They can be really simple things. And at the end of the day, just reflect upon how you do on that.
Yeah. Isn't that a great way? Because that's practicing, you know, the win. I call it the win from What's Important Now. We talked about that.
Yep.
Is that that's how you know. How do you know you've had a great day? Well, you know what? If your intention was to trust yourself in decisions, and then at the end of the day, as you're driving home, you're looking back and you go, I made some decisions and I trusted myself, you win.
Yep.
I mean, how beautiful is that? How simple. And if we can just practice the win, then as we start to take our dedicated right action, or we risk a little bit, or we step outside our comfort zone or outside our box, then there's been a practice of winning and a practice of acknowledging the fact that we have been successful in the things that we've done.
Perfect. So just one more quick topic here before, and I know you're famous for talking about incompletions, on people's incompletions and how they can impact people's lives. So maybe give some context for the people listening about what what incompletions are and how they impact us.
Well, incompletions to me are the reason why we don't achieve our goals. It's the reason why we don't have what we say we want in our lives. Incompletions are the reason why we a lot of times maybe fight with ourselves, with our partners, with our spouses, with our business associates. It's incompletions in conversation. It's what I didn't say, what I wanted to say. You know, as simple as, I wanted to say this to somebody before they left or before they left this job or before they passed away, and I didn't. So from the minute we're born and we're conscious, we're actually in a series of incompletions. And if we're not responsible or taking a look at what those incompletions are, they just pile up. And they just pile up and pile up and pile up and pile up. And one of our coaches years and years ago said to me, Stephanie, you cannot create on top of incompletions. Incompletions, if you visualize it, would be like this quicksand, this
right.
massive mound of quicksand. And then you go to try to, now I know what I want. Then you set a goal, right? And then you go to try to take a dedicated right action step in the direction of your true purpose. And then you just sink because you go, oh, look, I've got that incompletion. I didn't say to that person, geez, I forgot to call that person back. That person's mad at me. I didn't get my 2010 taxes done. All of a sudden, all these incompletions show up.
Would you say that we're deletion, we're incompletion creatures?
I do, actually. Yeah. And to me, again, in my coaching, it's probably the largest commonality in all the people that I've worked with and for is the biggest chunk of our time is starting out identifying incompletions because they're different for everybody. You know, you can only be as complete as you can be, you know, in the moment. So for example, if you're reading a book and it's beside your bed and it's pulling you, you've got 10 books beside your bed and they're all half read. Well, you know what? Put 9 of them away
right.
and complete that one. So practice completing, you know, all those things. With my clients, I give them a list of to-dos. Okay. This, and I help them do it, their list, not mine. And it only has 6 things on it. I had one client that had 47 to-dos that he was planning on doing, and every day he would just roll the to-dos forward, and there'd be 5 or 6 or 7 more on the list. And so finally we said, you know, what are the, so we did a hierarchy, we linked it to his values, we got it down to 6 things, and he is only allowed to have 6 things on his list every day, and 4 of them have to be checked off before he ends his day.
Right.
So the commitment is to completing incompletions. And really, if that's all you do in the next 6 weeks, let's say, you know, depending on how you're moving your goals forward, et cetera, the minute you understand the concept of incompletions, if all you do for the next 6 weeks is complete incompletions, make phone calls you need to make, clean out files, clean out your sock drawer, you know, put the air in the tire for the bikes, plan the vacation, like whatever is incomplete in whatever area of life, if that's all you do for the next 4 to 6 weeks, you will be taking dedicated right action, and all of a sudden, this is the coolest thing, is time, energy, and money begin to show up.
I like that formula. So mm-hmm. are you saying, if I'm paraphrasing for you, the first step would be in an awareness, that awareness that we have incompletions and an awareness of what they are, and then tackling the most important from the beginning?
Well, depending on your values, we don't know what the most important is, because it's not always the most obvious, which is really cool. The most obvious incompletion, the one that's calling to us a lot of times, is generally the one that we're most drawn to, most attracted to, the one that we like to do anyway. We're creatures of habit. We like to be successful, so we keep doing things we like to do over and over again.
Right.
So it's not always the most obvious one. It's the one that you walk by and kind of look over your shoulder and go, ah, I meant to. Or that person that you said you were going to call at 5 o'clock on Thursday and you didn't call, and then you run into them at Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, ah, that's an incompletion. So it's not that you're a bad person or that you dropped the ball. It's just notice that maybe where do you take on too much or set a false expectation, or are you such a time optimist that you think you have so much time to do all this stuff, and the next thing you know, the reality of it is that you've got 7, 8 incompletions a day.
Right.
And they just keep building up.
Yeah, and it's amazing on how good you feel after you complete one of them, too. Like,
mm-hmm.
I have a small recent example. I have in our house, we have a front entrance where we have a chandelier, and it's 17 or 18 feet up, and all the light bulbs are burnt out. And the light bulbs have been burnt out for a year and a half on that chandelier. And I'm sitting there, and every time I go there, and I look, and it's dark, and I can't find what I'm looking for. And then finally, I tried different things. And finally, someone gave me an idea about with a ladder. And I had a ladder all along that I just didn't know how to use the ladder properly, how I extended it, and which wall to put it on. I climbed up there. The light bulbs were changed in 7 minutes of something that was a year and a half. And I, you know what, I honestly felt like the king of the world of that. I couldn't wait to phone my wife, and I couldn't wait to brag that I changed 3 light bulbs.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
And where else in our world? So if you look in your world right now, where else? So some people call those to-dos, right? And you know what, it just becomes another thing to do. But really, when you see it as an incompletion, and for me, I'm quite self-disciplined, so when I see an incompletion, I go, you know what? The incompletion is more important to complete than that thing is over there to do. Because we're always doing, you know. But if I can complete the things that nurture me, or to get that feeling of changing the 3 light bulbs, that's going to inspire me to go complete the next thing and
mm-hmm.
complete the next thing, which frees up that space and draws people into you, into your world. Because if you're so busy creating busyness, because you've got this huge, busy picture. And I was guilty of that. I used to create a busy picture all the time. But really what I was doing was running from incompletion to incompletion to incompletion mm-hmm. until I stopped still and went, you know what, I'm just going to clean out my computer bag today.
Yeah.
I did that actually not long ago after a rain trip. And I found things that I had just was looking for weeks and weeks. And they were just exactly there.
Perfect.
But I kept walking by the bag.
And that's one of the things that I've done myself this year. I made a commitment to is one day a month, like one working day a month, I'm taking off from work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm doing for the day. It's a day of completing completions. So
isn't that just an awesome exercise?
And it's something I've never done before, and it's just something, you know, I had one actually this past week, and it felt so good that you had a day of getting things done. It didn't feel rushed. It didn't feel like, anything was, there was nothing, you know, I had to accomplish something. But then I look back at the end of the day, it was stuff that had been on there for so long, and it got done, which was nice.
And they could have turned into shoulds and like, you know, and effortful things, if that's a word. But good for you. Yeah. And I have a question for you. Here,
okay.
I'm going to put on my little coach hat. So did the world fall apart when you took that day off?
No, it actually it was a better place.
You know, isn't that amazing? Russell, I swear to you, I used to think I was so important that mm-hmm. if I took, you know, some time to have a pedicure or time to take a day for my incompletions and to really nurture myself and put my world back together or whatever it was I needed to do, that, you know, something negative or bad would happen. You know what? It didn't.
Well, I tell you what, we could go on and on and on, because I love talking with you, because, you know, we actually just started getting on a roll here, and we could go on so many different tangents, but we have to be respectful.
Yes.
Stephanie, I've heard that you're coming to some of the RAIN workshops across the country. What are you going to be presenting at the RAIN workshops? What new insights, and what can people, after they've heard from you, walk away and feel that they can tackle the next challenge?
Well, I'm so excited because I'm doing Alberta and I'm doing Toronto and I'm doing BC, and this will be my first time on the BC stage, so I'm so excited. And what I'm going to be presenting is this the barriers to taking action? And there's going to be some note-taking, but there's also going to be some exercises. And if you have heard me speak before, there's actually takeaways and homework. So the
I mean, we don't have to. We're not just supposed to sit there and just learn through osmosis. I mean, you're actually
sorry.
Able to do something.
No, I'm that guy. I'm that guy that stands on stage and goes, you know, I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, I actually asked people to get up and to change seats with somebody else because there was the energy in the room was so flat and the moaning and the groaning was mm-hmm. so funny. So I probably will come up with something random and unique, as I usually do. But the biggest thing I want people to be able to take away, and that my commitment is to the RAIN members, is that they will be able to go and implement something immediately. It could be even, and oh, I don't want to give it away, but during my presentation.
Okay.
That they can actually create and complete an incompletion while I'm speaking and have that feeling that you're talking about. I don't want to give any more away, but that's my plan.
So everyone, make sure when you see Stephanie's on the agenda, bring your incompletions.
At least one or two or 12.
Exactly. I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to it because RAIN members, after your presentations, generally have clean up things, and they generally, after it's done, will progress forward. So that's it's invaluable that you're coming out very shortly.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for saying that. That's because that is my intention. Whether I can touch one person or 100 people, you know what? As long as somebody can take something away, and I know that I've done what my gift is, and that I've been given an opportunity by you guys, and I just appreciate it so much, Russell, that what you and Dawn and Patrick have created. The opportunity for RAIN members like myself to not only get the information on how to do real estate, but to understand that we as human beings matter. Oh my gosh, you guys are going to change the world in the way that you do things. So thank you just to the RAIN group and to the office and to everybody that's involved for this tiny, I know it's not a big shift, but it's a shift that allows people to bring their personhood and who they are as people to the RAIN meetings. So thank
Perfect.
You.
Thank you very much. So if someone wanted to get to know you a little better or get any more information about you, what would be the couple best places for people to learn more about Stephanie Hanlon?
Well, I do have a website. It's kind of more just like a giant brochure right now as I'm in transition, but they can check out stephaniehanlon.com, and it's STEFFANY, HANLEN.com, StephanieHanlon.com. My email address is Stephanie@StephanieHanlon.com. And I do have a 888 number. It's 1-888-242-7227. 1-888-242-7227. The best way to reach me, though, is email. I carry a BlackBerry, so Stephanie@StephanieHanlon.com will follow me anywhere.
Perfect. Anywhere you are in the world, and I know you
That's
are.
Exactly.
I know you're aware. Aren't you? You're off to, is it Greece?
Off
or?
To Spain.
Spain.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm off to Spain, so I'm very excited about that.
Yes, it's your AGM, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, yes. One of my businesses, Patrick and I own a little hockey company. It's not little anymore. It's called Quantum Speed High Performance Skating Systems. And every year we do a GM, and every other year our GM is in a unique place where our air mile points can take us the farthest.
That's beautiful.
So two years ago it was Greece, and now it's Spain.
Beautiful tradition.
Thank you.
So do you have any closing comments you'd like to leave for the people that are listening on the call?
Well, just thank you, obviously, very much for just taking the time and to add this opportunity for me to chat with you. I seriously felt like I've just had coffee with my best friend. So thanks, Russell, and thanks for engaging in that. And really to don't think you have to take massive action all over the place. Take one step, the obvious one, in the direction of what it is that you want. And if you understand the why of what it is you want, that step, and I guarantee this, will be really, really obvious, and it'll be very nurturing once you take it.
Fantastic message to leave off on. So I think that's a great place for us to close out here. It's Russell Westcott with the Real Estate Investment Network. Just wanted to thank each and every one of you of your investment, of your time, and your trust for listening to these special interviews. Today we had personal and performance coach Stephanie Hanlon, just another one of the interviews that you have access to as RAIM members. If you're currently a RAIM member, congratulations for being part of Canada's leading network of real estate action takers. If you're not yet a RAIM member and maybe you want to come out to check us out at one of our meetings, you can always call our office at 1-888-824-7346. That's 888-824-7346, and one of our client care specialists will help you out personally. Once again, it's Russell Westcott, Vice President of RAIM, signing off and looking forward to seeing each and every one of you at a workshop very soon. Bye for now.